this week, the debate over U.S. foreign aid.
When President Trump said he would unleash American energy dominance and reduce the size of the government and deport dangerous illegal aliens and make American communities safe again, he meant what he said, and that's what we're seeing.
Over the past few days, Democrats have warned the American people that DOGE is operating like a shadow government.
We'll hear from experts with two different views.
Well, I mean, ideally, I'd like to see a law passed by Congress that cuts the budget of USAID.
I really think that soft power, in a sense, is not a subcategory of foreign assistance so much as it is the overall impression that the United States creates around the world by the sum total of its assistance programs, its military partnerships, its behavior on the world stage, its dependability in crises for countries that might need our help. It's the basic image of the country.
From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Issues in the News.
I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London.
Meanwhile, the Democratic Party truly is seemingly lost. They have no rudder, they have no vision, they have no clear leader. The only message they have is anti-President Trump, and we've all seen that that's a failed strategy time after time.
Republican Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives Mike Johnson reacting to comments from Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer on Thursday.
Yesterday, I said that DOGE is not a real government agency. It has no authority to make spending decisions, to shut down programs, or ignore federal law. This is not debatable. This is an indisputable fact. No authority for spending decisions, to shut down programs, or ignore federal law. Yet Elon Musk took issue with that warning.
Johnson said President Trump is doing exactly what he promised he'd do on the campaign trail, and that the American people want it.
This is their reaction to the flurry of activity that's come out of the new administration. And the president is doing exactly what he said on the campaign trail that he is going to do, would do. And he's delivering on that. And we're a big part of that. And we're going to do it as well.
One of the complaints by Democrats is that Congress decides where the money should be spent and that the administration is circumventing the law by doing things like shutting down the U.S. Agency for International Development and folding it into the State Department. To that, Johnson said,
I'm a fierce advocate and defender of Article One. I mean, that look, we are the legislative branch. There's a reason the Founding Fathers put the Congress, the legislative branch, as the first article in the Constitution, and we're going to vigorously defend that. But what's happening right now, I think there's a gross overreaction in the media to what is happening. The executive branch of government in our system has the right to evaluate how executive branch agencies are operating and to ensure that not only the intent of Congress in funding mechanisms, but also the stewardship of precious American taxpayer dollars is being handled well. That's what they're doing by putting a pause on some of these agencies and by evaluating them, by doing these internal audits. That is a long overdue, much welcome development. That's what the American people demand and deserve. And that's what's happening. So we don't see this as a threat to Article One at all. We see this as an active, engaged, committed executive branch authority doing what the executive branch should do.
Let's talk to someone who can help us understand what the Republicans are saying and what they hope to accomplish.
Joining us now is Alex Narasta with the Cato Institute.
So first, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So there is a new divide, controversy between the Republicans and the Democrats over the work that DOGE is doing. The Democrats say everything they're doing is illegal. The Republicans seem to be saying this is what Trump campaigned on and he's delivering on the campaign promise. How do you see it?
Well, I think there are some very real concerns about the process and methods of cutting this agency's funding, USAID. I agree wholeheartedly with the goal and with the outcome, but I also think it needs to be done lawfully, and appealing to election results isn't good enough. So we need to make sure that these cuts are lawful, and part of the reason we need to make sure of that is to make sure that they stick. Because if they are unlawful cuts, then they are merely temporary, and they will be soon reversed by the courts, by Congress, or at least by the next time there's an election.
So what about this power that the president has given to Elon Musk for the Department of Government Efficiency? That's one of the big complaints they have, that he doesn't have the authority, and this should have been done in a different way. Speaker Johnson says the media is grossly overreacting to these efforts.
So I think Johnson is correct that the media is overreacting to the severity of these cuts. The cuts in USAID, for example, are cuts to a very small agency that controls a very small portion, a fraction of a percent of federal government spending. So that is definitely an overreaction. But the very real concerns over whether these cuts are lawful, over the authority that this agency, the DOGE Commission, has to unilaterally accomplish these cuts, those are very legitimate and serious concerns that need to be discussed and to play out. But the exaggeration of the severity and impact in these cuts is really, really quite too much to bear.
We'll get back to that in a second, but how would you like to see them do it?
Well, I mean, ideally, I'd like to see a law passed by Congress that cuts the budget of USAID. And perhaps the president can push a law like that, argue that a law like that should be passed, argue that these cuts have been identified by DOGE, headed by Musk. That would be a totally legitimate, legal, and basically a legitimate way to do it.
When you say cut the budget, do you mean make budget cuts to the agency but continue to have it do some of the work it does? Or do you mean eliminate it, the agency altogether, but through Congress?
I would like to eliminate the agency altogether through Congress. I think that would be, whether Congress decides to eliminate or to cut funding, either one of those is totally legal, legitimate, above board, constitutional, no legal controversies to any of that. I mean, the only controversy here is the way in which they're going about cutting the agency. That's the controversy.
As I understand it, the plan is sort of to take what USAID is doing and put it in the State Department. Is that your understanding?
That seems to have happened, is that it's already been folded in, as I understand, to the State Department.
Without the legislation.
Yes. Right. And, the thing is, the president has some opaque authority about reorganizing certain portions of the federal government. He's a chief executive. He's supposed to be in charge of some of these things. He may have some legal authority to move some people around, to move some small agencies like this around. But Congress is supposed to have the power of the purse and control budgets.
What about the power that the president has given to Elon Musk? That's one of the Democrats' biggest complaints.
Yeah, I mean, the agency that DOGE took over, this USDS, this former digital service, supposed to have some of these powers. There are legitimate concerns over whether this is legal. I mean, unfortunately, the law is very complicated in this area about who gets to be in charge of these agencies, who appoints the heads, who are they responsible to, who do they answer to, who checks them. Those are all legitimate questions. This type of thing has not been done before, but there is a real concern about the legality, and I think the courts will step in at some point in the very near future to sort this out.
So what is the view on what USAID's mission was, that of exercising soft power?
Yeah, so a lot of people do think a lot of what it was doing is good. There's disagreement about that. If the money is just transferred into the State Department, and then the State Department has more control over how that money is spent, then it's not really a budget cut, and DOGE is not really accomplishing its goals. I mean, we have to remember that Elon Musk talked about cutting between $1 and $2 trillion of spending, and you're not going to find that, of course, in USAID.
Well, of course, they said the employees are all being put on administrative leave by the end of the week. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, when federal employees are put on administrative leave, they get paid and they don't work.
That's what I understand as well. But it's a very small agency, a relatively small number of government employees. And it sounds to me like DOGE is getting its experience and cutting its teeth on this agency before it moves on to bigger agencies like the Department of Health and Human Services.
Sure. I mean, most of the budget, right, is the military budget, Medicaid.
Medicare and Social Security.
Right, Social Security, right.
Those are the big ones. And, you know, the federal budget's over $7 trillion. And we have about $2 trillion deficit. So whatever you think about the methods that DOGE is going about to try to make some small cuts here and there in USAID and what they may be doing in the future to HHS, some kind of cuts are going to be necessary. The major problem, though, and the disagreement that's totally legitimate and that needs to be sorted out by the courts is whether it's legal for DOGE to come in and do this. So that's really the big controversy now. It's not so much over the types of cuts that we're seeing, but more over how they are being accomplished.
Do you think it's headed to court?
I think it's almost guaranteed that it'll be headed to court. Almost everything that's done nowadays heads to court, and this seems more controversial than most. So I believe it will be looked at soon by the courts.
Thank you so much for the insight into this.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
That was Alex Narasta with the Cato Institute.
You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London.
Today, I'll sign a waiver of our programs, our foreign aid programs that work in conjunction with our partners here that have been successful, so those successes can continue. And we're going to look for opportunities to expand upon those programs by making available new technologies that will allow them to even be more effective in stopping these drugs. This is an example of the kinds of programs that make America safer and stronger.
U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, he was in the Dominican Republic, talking about funding a foreign aid program that the Trump administration thinks puts America first. That's the new overall policy driving U.S. diplomacy. We just heard from someone who told us he thinks all aid that flowed through USAID should be cut and not transferred to the State Department.
Now, let's hear from someone who believes the opposite. He thinks giving aid to people is one of the things that makes the United States the United States.
Michael O'Hanlon is a senior fellow with the 21st Century Defense Initiative and director of research for the Foreign Policy Program at the Brookings Institution.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure.
So, you know, there's been a lot of talk and conversation here and around the world about the United States halting all foreign aid assistance. And of course, the United States is by far the world's largest source of foreign assistance, and U.S. aid has been where most of that funding came from. There are varying views on, well, why are we giving our money to all these other people when we have problems here? But there's a thing called soft power diplomacy. And I wonder if you could just start with explaining to us what that is and why U.S. aid in particular and foreign aid plays a role in that.
Sure. I think it is correct to subdivide assistance into different categories. And you can talk about this soft power, if you will, as one of those categories. But it's worth first sort of delineating the other categories as well. And one of them is humanitarian aid, where you're trying to keep people alive, whether it's President George W. Bush's PEPFAR program for people with AIDS, whether it's children with childhood diseases that have often historically killed them, or mothers in childbirth who have died of the childbirth process, and trying to help them with basic medical care and clean instruments, you know, and to avoid infection. These are just some basic things we've been doing for decades, really in the name of humanitarianism. And I would hope that a president who, you know, has made a strong appeal to religious communities as part of his campaigning would recognize the ethical importance of those programs, even though they may not give us any soft or hard power per se, but just be the right thing to do. So there's humanitarian aid. Of course, that also includes emergency aid for famines or for earthquake survivors or what have you. And then there are programs that are designed to foster economic development by helping countries build infrastructure or institutions or reform their laws to make it easier to own property, to encourage business formation. And that's a whole category of assistance that's usually, that, you know, the world has usually struggled to make those kinds of programs effective, but we have gotten better over the years. And it's always worth an occasional new debate on whether there's a better way to do it. And so a lot of us who may oppose the cutoff of aid that President Trump's instituted would acknowledge the value of fresh new debates on development assistance from time to time. And then a third category is probably more in the realm of hard power than soft power, and that is basically security assistance to our allies, some of whom we're just helping them defend themselves, but others of whom we consider that what they've done to defend themselves to be helpful for our own security. And for example, when Ukraine fends off Vladimir Putin, it makes it harder for Russia to threaten Western Europe and NATO countries. And so, you know, that kind of foreign assistance, I would put in the category of hard power, not soft power. And then finally, the soft power part, you know, what exactly does that mean? Part of it is you want the world to think of us as reliable, trustworthy, and generous in spirit. And so all those other categories of aid, can, even though their main purpose is other than soft power, they can contribute to soft power. But on top of that, there are programs that are explicitly designed to enhance our political standing around the world or to help our friends, you know, in a more more selective way. And that could be various kinds of, you know, international broadcasting. It could be support for countries that are close American friends, whether, you know, some development program or humanitarian need justifies it or not, just because we want to see those countries do better and we believe in them and they believe in us. But I really think that soft power, in a sense, is not a subcategory of foreign assistance so much as it is the overall impression that the United States creates around the world by the sum total of its assistance programs, its military partnerships, its behavior on the world stage, its dependability and crises for countries that might need our help. It's the basic image of the country. And again, there aren't really line items on the foreign assistance budget that are usually called soft power. There may be a few, but there aren't that many. It's more the sum total of everything we do. And so when you start to jeopardize that, countries start to say, you know, what's the real difference between Russia and the United States anyway, if they're both equally cynical about how they use their power around the world, and the United States is now arbitrarily cutting off aid programs that are meant to keep people alive, you know, that's going to change our image of the country and its basic motivations, its basic dependability as a friend. And so it's in that sense that I would define soft power.
And to be fair, there is in some of the things that we do in this regard a self-interest. If you can stop Ebola in Africa, it doesn't come to the United States.
Right.
But that having been said, there are things that work. The Republicans have in their talking points a series of things that are highly questionable about that USAID was funding. And I think you briefly touched on it. It's not bad to look at what we're giving money to and, you know, determine as the time goes on whether it's viable or not.
Right. And I did a book when I arrived at Brookings 30 years ago, which, if you like, was sort of about 50 years into the modern era of development assistance. And I wrote this book with an economist who knew the economics better than I did. But we looked at the history of how the United States and other donors and the World Bank and other multilateral organizations, as well as private charities, how they had deployed money and resources over the previous half century, basically since World War II. And that was essentially the defining beginning era of major development assistance, roughly from the 1940s into the early 60s, when a lot of the original efforts were started and instituted and institutions were created to carry out this agenda. And so by the 1990s, we had several decades worth of experience. And you could look back and you could say, on average, the countries that have received more development assistance to build their economies have actually not done any better than the countries that received less. And that was partly because we just rewarded our friends, or we gave money to corrupt governments because at least they weren't communist during the Cold War.
There are people who think that the money should be cut permanently, and they're on a mission to cut $1 trillion to $2 trillion out of the $7 trillion federal budget. So I just want to sort of summarize, I'm running a program, or I'm a dependent in a program in Africa or in the Middle East, and the program gets cut off. You made the point early on. I just want to summarize it again. And I am aware that this money is coming from the United States, and I feel good about the United States because of it, and it gets shut down. What happens overseas to these people, the way they think about the world?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I know what you're saying, and I like to see our image promoted myself, but I wouldn't try to justify to an American taxpayer that they should give money overseas just to make people like us better as the main goal, because how countries feel about us is going to be dependent on so many other things as well, like we just discussed, you know, our broader foreign policy, our diplomacy, our image in the world, you know, Beyonce, Billie Eilish. I mean, there's just so many things that contribute to America's overall image. And the notion that a foreign aid program can make a big difference, you know, is maybe not the best reason to give hard-earned taxpayer dollars. So I like to justify the programs more on the earlier grounds that I identified, keeping people alive, helping them build their economies so they can be better economic partners with us, helping them improve their security so conflict around the world is less common and we don't have to go in with our own military and squelch it or resolve it. And then also the point you folks made about trying to prevent bad things like pandemics from spreading abroad in the interest of protecting our own country here at home, sort of with a front line of defense strategy. And all those things together, if you think in those, frankly, more selfish terms, many of those goals, except the first that I identified, are largely selfish, then I think the soft power follows. But I don't tend to go, as a supporter of foreign aid, but who's talked to a lot of skeptics of foreign aid and a lot of taxpayers who have worked hard to make their income and sort of resent every dollar they have to give to Washington. I don't tend to lead with the argument about buying friends because, again, it's so fickle anyway, and it may not be a lofty enough goal to justify people having to empty their own wallets. But first of all, the amount of foreign aid we give, of course, is tiny. You're talking about saving $1 trillion out of a $7 trillion budget. And of course, all of foreign aid together is in the ballpark of $50 billion a year. So we're talking about 5% of that $1 trillion goal. And even if you eliminated every single dime, including the dimes that go to Israel and other friends of the United States that even Trump supporters typically don't want to abandon. So it's a modest amount of money. And for that modest amount of money, we keep a lot of people alive. We help countries improve their economies. We help countries improve their security. We identify and stymie things like pandemic disease early and nip them in the bud. And then as a fringe benefit of all that, we tend to find that people often like us better and see our soft power as even more impressive. But I would make that last argument a derivative or consequence of the others and focus on those.
Thank you so much for taking the time to explain all of this to us. Really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice talking with you both.
Michael O'Hanlon, a senior fellow with the 21st Century Defense Initiative and Director of Research for the Foreign Policy Program at the Brookings Institution.
And that's all the time we have this week. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for listening.
And during the week, you can get more news from our podcast, The Issue. It's posted on our website, voanews.com, or wherever you get your podcast from.
Join us next week for more Issues in the News. Until then, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.